Ever find yourself wondering what happens when, you know, a seemingly done deal gets completely sideways?
Yeah.
Because of something totally out of left field.
Oh, yeah.
For anyone studying law, especially when you're thinking about contracts, understanding how unforeseen disasters impact those agreements is absolutely vital.
Definitely.
Today, we're diving deep into a really compelling Louisiana case, Payne v. Hurwitz. It's a case that really unpacks the idea of sticking to your commitments even when a hurricane decides to join the party.
That's a great way to put it. This case, it offers a really clear lens, you know, through which we can examine how courts interpret what happens when contractual obligations run headfirst into a natural disaster.
Right.
We're specifically going to dissect the concepts of force majeure, that's the act of God idea, essentially, and specific performance, which is the legal way of saying you have to go through with the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just abstract legal theory. It's about the real-world consequences when the unexpected hits. So our goal today, our mission, is to extract the core principles from Payne v. Hurwitz. That way you can really grasp how courts decide who bears the responsibility when these unforeseen events occur and what remedies are actually on the table.
Sounds good. And we've got some solid sources.
We do. We've got a detailed rundown of the case, a more concise brief, and even some like background discussion points to make sure we get a really comprehensive understanding.
Excellent. Okay, so let's paint the picture. Back in August 2005, the Paynes were all set to buy Hurwitz's house. The price was $241,500.
Right.
Now, this wasn't just a standard contract. It actually included a provision for a 60-day extension, specifically if repairs happened to be needed. Seemed like they had all their bases covered, right?
It did seem that way. I mean, they had a clear agreement, a defined timeline, and even that built-in safety net for potential repair delays. Mm-hmm. But then, well, late August 2005 brought Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, a massive event.
Absolutely devastating. And this wasn't just a bit of bad weather. The property suffered substantial damage. We're talking around $60,000 worth, according to Hurwitz's own estimates, actually.
Wow. $60,000. Okay. And this is where the simple deal took a sharp turn, right?
Exactly. Instead of, say, exploring the repair options or even discussing that 60-day extension that was right there in the contract.
Yeah, it was available.
Hurwitz just decided he no longer wanted to sell. He basically argued that Katrina was a classic example of force majeure, you know, something completely beyond his control that should excuse him from his obligations.
So he said, hurricane happened, deal's off. Basically.
Pretty much. Impossible for me to proceed. But the Paynes, they didn't agree. They decided to sue. And what they really wanted was a court order forcing Hurwitz to complete the sale. That's the specific performance part.
Right. They still wanted the house.
Exactly. They also sought compensation, you know, damages for the trouble they'd been put through. And interestingly, even after the hurricane's impact, Hurwitz sent an email to the title attorney clearly stating he no longer wished to sell the property.
Hmm. That seems significant. Like, it wasn't just about the physical damage.
Well, it certainly suggests that. It points towards maybe his mindset changing, separate from just the repair issue.
So the case went to trial, and the initial judge actually sided with the Paynes on some points, gave them some money back.
Yeah, they were awarded some monetary relief, their deposit back, a penalty, reimbursement for legal fees, things like that. But crucially, the court stopped short of ordering Hurwitz to sell the house.
Okay. So no specific performance at that stage. That seems like a pretty significant distinction.
It is a critical distinction, and it's precisely why the case ended up in the appellate court. The Paynes felt that just getting some money back wasn't enough. They still wanted the house they had contracted to buy.
Makes sense.
So the appellate court then had to grapple with some really fundamental legal questions.
Okay, let's really dig into that legal knot, as we called it. What were the main issues the appellate court had to untangle here?
There were several key issues, all kind of intertwined. First, did Hurwitz actually breach the contract in the first place by not even considering those built-in extension options?
Right, just ignoring them.
Second, and this is really the heart of the force majeure argument, did Hurricane Katrina truly render his performance impossible under Louisiana Civil Code Article 1986?
Impossible versus just difficult.
Exactly. It's important to understand here that the law distinguishes between something that temporarily hinders performance and something that fundamentally and permanently prevents it. That's a key difference.
Okay.
The court also looked closely at whether Hurwitz made any reasonable attempts to find alternative solutions. Like, did he try negotiating further delays with the Paynes given the extreme circumstances?
Did he even try?
Right. And finally, considering all of that, the big question was why the appellate court ultimately determined that specific performance forcing the sale was the appropriate remedy rather than just sticking with the money damages the trial court awarded.
Okay, let's unpack that reasoning then, starting with the issue of breach. How did the appellate court view Hurwitz's actions, or maybe his inaction, regarding those extensions?
The appellate court was quite definitive on this point. They concluded that Hurwitz acted volitionally, meaning it was a conscious, deliberate decision on his part when he refused to even consider the extension clause or explore other options with the Paynes.
He just shut it down.
Essentially, yeah. He just declared the deal dead. This failure to even engage with the existing contractual mechanisms or even attempt to negotiate was a significant factor in the appellate court's finding that he had indeed breached the contract. It really suggested he didn't even try to make the agreement work.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about the force majeure argument? I mean, Hurricane Katrina was huge, unprecedented. Why didn't that automatically excuse him?
That's a really crucial point to understand. The court fully acknowledged the immense, unforeseeable nature of Hurricane Katrina. No question there.
Of course.
However, they emphasized that under Louisiana law, specifically Article 1986 of the Civil Code, a temporary obstacle to fulfilling a contract doesn't automatically erase the entire obligation.
Okay, temporary versus permanent again.
Right. The key legal threshold is whether performance becomes truly and permanently impossible, not just more difficult or delayed. In this specific case, the court determined that while Katrina certainly caused damage and would necessitate delays for repairs.
Significant delays, probably.
Absolutely. But it did not make it absolutely and permanently impossible for Hurwitz to eventually transfer ownership of the property to the Paynes.
So the house could still be fixed and sold eventually.
That was the court's view. They also specifically noted that Hurwitz's claims about, you know, the unavailability of labor and materials needed for repairs lacked sufficient credible evidence to support a claim of true impossibility. He didn't really prove he couldn't get it done.
Gotcha. So it wasn't enough for a major event to happen. The event had to fundamentally prevent the contract from ever being fulfilled.
Yeah.
And the court also looked hard at whether Hurwitz tried to find other ways, right? Alternatives.
Precisely. The appellate court placed significant weight on this principle. A party facing unforeseen difficulties has a responsibility to actively seek out and explore reasonable alternatives before just throwing up their hands and claiming impossibility.
You can't just give up immediately.
No. And the concurring opinions from Judges McDonald and McClendon really underscored this point. They focused quite a bit on what they perceived as Hurwitz's bad faith, his complete unwillingness to even attempt to act or negotiate with the Paynes in good faith.
So they thought he wasn't genuinely trying.
Their perspective seemed to be that his actions reflected more of a deliberate choice to abandon the contract, rather than him being stuck in a situation of genuine, unavoidable impossibility. It wasn't just the storm, it was his reaction to the storm.
Interesting. So that leads us to the four-factor test the court apparently used for force majeure.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through how that framework played out here?
Absolutely. The appellate court essentially used a four-part analysis to evaluate Hurwitz's claim. First, was the event Hurricane Katrina unforeseeable? Yes, the court agreed. Definitely unforeseeable.
Okay, check one.
Second, did the event render performance truly and permanently impossible? Here, the court concluded no. It primarily caused a delay, not permanent impossibility.
Okay, so that one's a no.
Right. Third, did Hurwitz demonstrate that he made reasonable efforts to explore alternative solutions? Again, the court found a lack of evidence to support that he did. So another no.
Two no's.
And fourth, would the delayed performance still be beneficial to the Paynes? In this situation, the answer was yes. They still wanted to purchase the house.
Right. They still wanted the property.
So because the second and third elements of this test, impossibility and effort towards alternatives, were not satisfied, Hurwitz's force majeure defense ultimately failed.
That framework makes it pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
And that directly brings us to the remedy. Why did the appellate court overturn the trial court and go with specific performance forcing the sale instead of just the money damages?
Well, under Louisiana law for real estate contracts, specific performance is actually considered the standard, the preferred remedy, when a seller breaches a purchase agreement.
Really? The default is forcing the sale?
Generally, yes, unless the buyer has acted in bad faith, which clearly wasn't the situation with the Paynes here. They were ready, willing, and able to complete the purchase.
Okay.
So the appellate court reasoned that because the Paynes met their obligations and still wanted the property, Hurwitz should be legally compelled to fulfill his end of the bargain. As a result, they reversed the trial court's ruling on the remedy, granted specific performance, and essentially nullified those monetary damages previously awarded.
Wow. So they basically said, you have to sell in the house.
That's the effect.
Yeah.
The case was then sent back, remanded, to the lower court just to handle the logistical details needed to finalize the sale.
So the key lesson from Payne v. Hurwitz.
Yeah.
It isn't just about this one house in Louisiana after a hurricane, is it? What are the broader implications here for real estate and contract law?
Yeah, it sends a really powerful message. It makes clear that the legal defense of force majeure has its limits. It's not some easy escape clause when unexpected things happen.
Not a magic wand.
Definitely not. It narrows the scope of how that defense can be successfully argued, at least in Louisiana. The ruling clarifies that natural disasters, even huge ones, don't automatically invalidate contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, there's this legal expectation of what we might call contractual resilience.
Well,
parties are expected to make reasonable efforts to adapt, to seek solutions, to mitigate potential losses, as long as the core performance remains possible, even if it requires delay.
So you gotta try.
You absolutely have to try. The case strongly underscores the importance of the duty to mitigate, that legal obligation to take reasonable steps to avoid or minimize damages, and the overarching principle of acting in good faith.
Good faith seems key here.
Very much so. And importantly for prospective buyers, it reinforces that specific performance is a real, tangible, and often preferred remedy in real estate disputes when just getting money back doesn't really fix the situation. Sometimes you just want the specific property you contracted for.
Right. Especially with unique properties like houses.
Right.
So the core principle from Payne v. Hurwitz boils down to this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just abandon a contract when something bad happens, even something huge like Katrina. You have a responsibility, an obligation, really, to explore all reasonable alternatives.
Exactly. Like using those extension clauses that might already be in the contract or just engaging in good faith negotiation before you can successfully claim force majeure.
And if completing the deal remains feasible, even if it's delayed and needs repairs, the courts are likely to hold you to your original commitment, especially in real estate.
Precisely. It really highlights the court's strong inclination to enforce specific performance in these situations when the underlying purpose of the agreement can still ultimately be achieved. It's a robust reminder that contracts carry significant legal weight, even when faced with really challenging circumstances.
For our listeners, especially those in law school, this case raises some really interesting questions, doesn't it? Like, how might courts in other states, with maybe different interpretations of force majeure or different standards for specific performance, approach similar facts?
That's a great point for comparison. Jurisdictions can differ.
Definitely something to think about as you dig deeper into contract law variations. And, you know, from a practical standpoint, Payne v. Hurwitz just screams the importance of meticulous contract drafting.
Oh, absolutely.
And the absolute necessity of advising clients. Look, you have to act in good faith. Exhaust your options when the unexpected happens.
You really do. And it also makes you think about how force majeure clauses themselves might evolve or have evolved. You know, we've certainly seen a trend towards more specific language being included in contracts, trying to anticipate things like pandemics after COVID.
Right. Trying to spell it out more clearly.
Exactly. Attempting to allocate risk for a broader range of unforeseen circumstances up front. While Payne v. Hurwitz predates a lot of that, it gives us that foundational understanding of how courts tackle these issues when the contract language might be, let's say, less explicit.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks so much for breaking down this fascinating and really insightful case with me today.
My pleasure.
It's packed with important takeaways for anyone interested in contract law and, well, the messy reality of unforeseen events colliding with legal agreements.